Thank you very much for the invitation. My presentation is about the question of the relationship between climate change and migration. And my question is very simple. What do we know exactly? What are the sources we can rely on to deal with this big issue? Well, there are, so my presentation is in French, but I shall speak in English. And, but as you know, the academic English is but a variant of the academic French from the linguistic point of view. So we may observe a huge rise in the number of researches about this nexus between migration and climate change. It's really impressive, and there is a methodological challenge. The best studies I know are try to establish a connection, a correlation between two kinds of data, data on climate change, and most of them, for example, the studies made by economists are based on satellite images, which show over time the evolution of the use of the soil and the crops and so on. And the second series of data are the population change, which come essentially from censuses. But of course, censuses are the quality of the censuses is quite variable according to the regions of the world. And in order to be able to establish a correlation between these two kinds of series, you need first a degree of granularity which is rather thin, and you need a sufficient length of time. Well, let's say two decades, for example, two intervals between the censuses, since the standard interval between two censuses is a decennial interval, which has been, it has an American origin, it comes from the American Constitution, and then it has been widespread, it has been recommended by United Nations, etc. So when you succeed in making this, making a comparison and an analysis of the two time series, what do we observe? What do we? Well, it's rather difficult. The results are not very convincing. It's very difficult to measure the direct incidence of a climate change on international migrations, except, of course, for some island states, for example, in the Pacific or something like that. Maldives, of course, are the most famous example. But in fact, the idea that climate change will provoke an international migration is not, there is very few evidence about it. What we have is evidence about indirect links through aggregated variables, through collective factors. So for example, if the drought worsens, there is more urbanization. There is a positive correlation between urbanization and the rise of urban violence, for example. And we know by other studies that urban violence is one of the factors, of the triggers of international emigration. Well, this kind of indirect connection, which is not strictly convincing. And so some of these studies, for example, Catherine Milok, a Swedish researcher who works in France, has shown that if the drought worsens, there is the people become poorer, and they have less resources to emigrate, because it's important to remind that as a whole, if you look at the world databases about migration, the big matrix which correlates countries of birth with countries of residence. It's not true that the poorer a country is, the more migration there is. It is a hump shape, the correlation shape. And so, of course, the aspiration to migrate is strong in a lot of countries, even in France, 15% more or less of the population, French population. When you ask them, would you like to live in another country on a permanent basis, say yes. So the aspiration is not sufficient. You need some resources to migrate, a minimum of resources. And that's why the most important emigration rates you can observe in the world are countries like Maghreb, Georgia, Armenia, Mexico, etc., etc., who are precisely situated in the middle of the development of the human index development. If you scale the countries with human development index on a 10 bar scale, all these countries have the most, for example, the Balkan countries is a very striking example. 22% of the ex-communist Balkan countries live abroad, the population of these countries. And contrary to what is said constantly in the public discourse, this European desert, the very low fertility rate of this country, 1.4, 1.3, something like that, does not attract people from outside. On the contrary, the idea we have, this metaphor we have on that the overcrowded nations will necessarily spill over undercrowded nations is completely false. We have much more counterexamples and examples of this liquid metaphor of communicating vessels, you know, this is. And so what Catherine Millock has demonstrated that yes, if countries like Niger or Chad, for example, experiment a more severe drought than they already have, it will diminish the emigration rate instead of encouraging it. So it's a paradox. So, and that explains, justify the fact that most of the international organizations, prefer a fallback, solution de repli, which consists in studying the impact of climate migrations on internal displacement or internal force displacements. And I'll show you some example of the international structures which have been built in order to assess this kind of impact. And maybe another factor which explains why there is no very strong interest for the idea of international migrants, climatic international migrants, is the fact that there are very few countries which would be ready to welcome such migrants, because it's not doesn't correspond to the Geneva Convention, and the Geneva Convention is already fragile, and nobody wants to renegotiate the Geneva Convention. It's too it would be too dangerous for it. Some programs of relocation are discussed within, especially with the OIM, the International Organization of Migration, IOM. There is also the idea that temporary protection could be given, etc. But there are several forums of discussion about it, but it would take too many time to discuss it. So the relationship between migration, international migration, and climate is rather complex. It's also something traditional. If you look at the 19th century, 20th century, in in rural Europe, but also in Africa, in Asia, etc., it was a common pattern that migration was sort of insurance for the populations to counter the variability of the climate, to counter the volatility of the agricultural returns, and by several ways, or multi-activity, pluri-activity. During one period in the year, the people of the mountains, for example, could migrate to the plains, to the cities, etc., or delegating one member of the family to bring additional resources in order to smoothen the volatility of resources in this country. So the migration as an insurance, the migration as an adaptation to the difficulties to the raised by the climate is clear. And I began my career in Bolivia, in the Andes, in Indian communities. And I was very struck by the fact that an important fraction of the population, local population, well, they had several strategies. One of the strategies was to diversify the parcels and to distribute the parcels along the ecological stages in order to disperse the dangers. But the other strategy was also to migrate to La Paz, for example, in order to bring additional resources, which was absolutely indispensable. So this is a classical, was it a climate migration? Was it, is it voluntary? Is it forced? Is it, it's very difficult to determine exactly the category of this migration, which is rather classical. If I consult the existing literature about this question, one of the most detailed reports I've discovered is this one, Sandhula Verasinghe from the Georgetown University, What We Know About Climate Change and Migration. And she concludes that it is too simplistic and inaccurate to suggest that climate change causes human movement. And I think that most of the presentation we've heard this morning are on the same line. So the reason is that many other causes interact, political, economic, social, demographic. You see, French is the same language as English. And the selection bias of migrants, the selection at the departure, the vulnerability factors, all these kind of things are intricated. Well, so now let's look at have a look at the institutions which are supposed to gather data about forced displacement. One of them is a joint data center on forced displacement, really recently created by the World Bank Group and the UNHCR. It's rather recent, has been launched in Copenhagen and financed by the Danish government, and there are delegations in some countries in the Global South. And it is centered on 20 countries, most vulnerable countries, in order to facilitate, for example, to organize surveys on the vulnerability of people vis-a-vis the climate variability and so on. But they don't have in their database, they don't take stock, really, of the impact of climate migration on the climate change on migration. Whereas, and if, for example, they have an interesting classification developed by the World Bank, classification of fragile and conflict-affected situations, and in this classification, you don't find anything directly related to climate. Now, a more interesting institution for our purpose is IDMC, Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, which has been created by the Norwegian Refugee Council, more than 20 years ago. It's one of the members of the task force on the forced displacement, created by the COP21. And the other members are HCR, Red Cross, IOM, and so on. But of course, you have all other panels in Geneva, in Norway, etc., which are also discussing. But what is interesting in this IDMC is the fact that they have a database online, free access, and you can download two series of data, the conflict-induced displacement and the disaster-induced displacement. Donc les conflits armés et les catastrophes. And so they have several tools, a platform which tries to evaluate the risks of the probability of displacement due to disasters. You can also, there are tools in order to make a graph of all this. And certainly the most interesting instrument they have is what they call the iDetect. It is a data mining procedure which analyzes systematically thousands of articles and reports on the nature and the magnitude of disasters. And so they identify all the events, the extreme events, and they try to convert it into this a database, which is quite interesting. And the last tool they have is an analysis of course, all the images of damage, destruction in the caused by extreme events in areas which was not easily accessible. So if they, as a whole, they, and I take this graph from their own presentation, they combine a vast sample of sources, a vast spectrum of sources from national local authorities, media, civil society, so the NGOs are here, international organization, the Red Cross or Red Crescent, private sector, etc. So this is really quite impressive effort to gather, to collect information about the existence and magnitude of catastrophic events. So, if you look at the, if you have a look to this, their annual reports, it's not always easy to read because, in fact, you have to make a clear distinction, and the language they use is not very clear. As a demographer, it is my feeling. Because you have a statistic about the new displacement in the year Y, okay? And but also a stock, they take stock of the total number of persons displaced at the end of the year. So this is exactly the equivalent of the distinction between flows and stocks in demography, or of course incidence and prevalence. But what is striking in this kind of data is that the flows in 1 year are very often more important than the stock at the end of the year, which seems rather, because in fact, let's take an example. If you had huge floods in China, the Chinese authority consider that all the people that have displaced in order to prevent the population from the predictable flood corresponds to this displacement. And then after the flood, people come back to their housings. And so this kind of displacement is included in the calculation in the census by the Chinese authorities. Well, once you have understood and you have caught this the way it is classified, what are the results? And this is a graph of mine, but directly taken from the data. And I have superponed in two layers the number of millions of people And this is assets on the données de stock, data of stock data, due to conflicts, induced by conflicts, and the other by catastrophe. And you see that despite all the efforts made to analyze, to identify the force displacement due to environmental events, it's more or less, it represents more or less 1/8 of the total number of displacement, more or less. This is a scale of the, this is a classification of the, this is a, the top 38, and this top 38 include 90% of all the world total of displaced persons, so it's rather comprehensive. You see that Syria, Congo, Colombia, Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, so you see all these countries in conflict. They don't include Venezuela. Venezuela is more or less more than 4 million people who had to flee from their country because it's not considered as a forced displacement. It's a choice made by the people, etc. So, of course, it's rather controversial. And of course, Ukraine is not here because this is a stock taken before the conflict, the invasion, the Russian invasion. So, well, of course, the way the data are gathered in these two kinds of events is not the same, but the effort made, especially through the iDetect system, the Determine system, to identify the number of displaced persons due to catastrophe is a huge effort. They employ more or less 6 or 7 people at full time to work on this, which is an important resource, and I envy them. For example, let's take the same data and but classify them according to the importance of catastrophes, of disasters, events due to disaster. Afghanistan, India, Pakistan. Afghanistan, if you look at the country report, it corresponds to some floods, which were very important in 21. So all this data from 1 year to another are rather volatile. It's really sensitive to the the events, unexpected events that occurred in this year. And if you look, for example, at the 2019, it will be quite different. But strikingly enough, the countries in which you have these disasters also, in part, correspond to the countries with important conflicts. Well, it's of course this kind of database raises more questions than it asks, than it gives answers. According to the last summaries, to the last annual reports. In 2020, there were 59 million people with this status of internal displaced. So the conflicts, I already told you that it was 1/8 of this population were displaced by environmental events. One month ago, not even 1 month ago, they published the last report, and the number has raised to 59 million, due essentially to Ethiopia, Afghanistan, Syria, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Myanmar, Birmania. And of course, Ukraine is still not included in this a report on the year 2021. This is the report, last report, published in May 22. And this is a map they publish in their report or in the press conference. And of course, the choice you make, the size, your size you give to each figure, to each circle, produces an important visual effect. You don't see the limits of the countries. Do you see them? No? Ah, okay. So Asia is on the right, of course. Africa and Europe is, well, I'm sorry for that, but yes, it was a little gray, a very discrete gray area, but you can see the name of the countries. So, for example, China, of course, is quite impressive, the number of displaced persons in China, but this is due to the famous flood I was talking about. And, of course, compared to, because these are absolute numbers, it's always difficult for a demographer to accept absolute numbers if you consider the fact that the different countries have very, very different population. And so, compared to the 1,300,000,000 or 400,000,000 people you have in China, it's nothing. It's a very, very low figure. And if you look proportionally to the population, the importance of displaced person, the first country in the world is Vanuatu, the former New Hebrides. It was a condominium, a French-English condominium, maybe you remember, till the 70s. And why Vanuatu? Because Vanuatu is a volcanic archipelago. It's a, there are constant lava streams, eruptions, volcanic eruptions, and so on and so on. It's a very specific situation. Well, so, but you can see that of the conflicts in yellow are very much concentrated, but not exclusively on Africa. You have also, of course, a part of them in southern southeastern Europe. Here is a zoom on this the same data. Maybe it's more visible. Okay, and here is Africa. Well, this kind of data they also publish a balance of a summary of the relative importance of conflicts continent by continent, or region by region. And sub-Saharan Africa is, of course, the most represented region. But I will just finish on this is my last slide, on the typology they use to identify the natural hazards. And you can see that the geophysical, it's an interesting question. Earthquakes have nothing to do with climate. Earthquake may have an impact on climate, a very important earthquake in the past, and then volcanic eruptions may have an impact on climate. But in fact, this you should make a distinction between environmental migration and climatic migration. Climate migration is a subpart of the whole environmental migration. And the relative importance of this, every kind of migration can be represented this way. So these are the new movements registered in this year, in the last year. And they have classified under the climate rubric section, the storm, floods, wildfires, droughts, éboulements, avalanche, etc. And surprisingly enough, the heat waves, canicule, represent a very slight fraction of all this classification. Well, this, it's this was a modest presentation. I just wanted to give you an idea of the sources we have. But the main conclusion I'm drawing from this is that by now, migrations due to conflicts, to war, to foreign interventions, etc., are much more important than migrations due to climate. There is a myth about the massive climate migration that we would expect in the next decades. And it would be very much interesting to make the history of this myth, to study this myth, why it is so easily widespread. Why the public opinion and whatever the political streams are so attached to this idea that we'll have to expect massive migration. Because in fact, they don't have any idea of the order of magnitude of migration that already exists. It's not the poorest of the poorest who migrate more, not at all. And so we have a false idea of the global structure of migration moves. Thank you.